Howdy, we're starting the stream 1 minute before the countdown is out. That's my Christmas present to you. Don't say I never did anything for you. So tonight's topic is a T-Rex talk called Why Christmas in 2020 is Merry. And I know that for some of you it doesn't seem merry. It doesn't seem very merry for me right now because I'm having to do it all by myself here in the studio. Actually, Chad's here in the studio with me, but he's behind the camera and I could not convince him to come and sit on the comfy couch and talk to you guys. I had hoped that we would have more people as part of this T-Rex talk, but because of family stuff or people who are kind of sick or various end-of-year deadlines that we have, it's just me. And I think that a lot of this year has been like this for a lot of you guys. 2020 has been a rough year for a lot of people. And there's even some folks in the comments talking about why would you say Christmas is merry, what's merry about it. In fact, when I was at the bank this morning, I said Merry Christmas to a guy, and he was like, well, I don't know about merry, but it is Christmas. There seems to be a fair amount of this kind of attitude going around, and that is something that I kind of want to talk about. So in this live stream, in this T-Rex talk, we're going to be talking about the true meaning of Christmas, and I don't mean that in a super schmaltzy way. But we are going to talk about that, and we're also going to talk about some really interesting things to think about for this year for you guys. But also, I want to talk a little bit about some things that I'm really grateful for that have really made me grateful for this year and for you folks that are watching in terms of T-Rex. We've had a phenomenal year at T-Rex where we have had some great blessings, some great difficulties. It's been a very rough year for some of the plans that we had, but the company has grown, and we've been able to ship out more products to you guys than we actually thought that we were going to. It's been a better year than we anticipated in some ways, and it's been a much harder year than we'd anticipated in a bunch of other ways. So that is something that has been really interesting. But I know that for America in general and for the world, it's been a much harder year than a lot of us had planned on. There's a lot of things that we can be rightly concerned about or even righteously indignant about. We've seen lockdowns kill thousands of small businesses and divide families and close churches, and the government has expanded its power, and these things are kind of discouraging. We've seen riots and demonstrations that are highly problematic. We've seen an election that I believe is highly problematic. And one of the ways that I think that we can know that the election was problematic is that we can know that if I talk about the problematic nature of the election, this video will disappear. So one of my dad's videos was taken down off of YouTube because he was talking about the election. So if somebody has their thumb on the scale of the conversation about the election, I don't think it's crazy to assume that we are also having issues with someone putting their thumb on the actual election itself. And we're having some lag on YouTube. We've had some issues with YouTube that are problematic as well. I see you guys posting lag. Is the audio something that is intelligible at this point? Chad's going to keep working on video stuff, and I'm going to keep talking. What's your frames per second, Chad? Can you see frames per second? Oh, video's working now. Everyone says it's good now. Okay, great. So now you can see me again, which the main thing is if you look back there and see all the Christmas lights we hang up, those are actually, I need to remember to take those home because those are from my kid's bedroom. They're going to want those back tonight. That's really important. So what I was talking about is a lot of things that are problematic about the year 2020 that we're aware of. We got some mandatory vaccinations. It's kind of weird how the video, the frames per second dropped when I started talking about the election. We got some mandatory vaccinations potentially on the horizon. The government just took $900 billion of our money to give to people that we didn't want to give our money to. There's just stuff like that that's happening. And then the thumbnail on the video references an ATF letter that some of you have probably seen or heard about or heard speculation about. And then a lot of the stuff that you guys ordered for Christmas presents is delayed because USPS is all backed up and problematic because it's a bureaucracy. So between the ATF and USPS, I am guessing that a bunch of gun parts that you guys bought are going to be outlawed before the government can deliver them to you. So that's why a bunch of you are asking why it is that I would say Merry Christmas in the year 2020. I think there's a silver lining in a lot of these clouds, and I want to touch on those just quickly. I actually feel like the ATF overreach, and I want to focus on that one, partly because we had this hilarious idea for the thumbnail. I think it was hilarious. We thought it was a pretty hilarious thumbnail. So it became the thumbnail of the video, so now we have to talk about it. We were going to talk about this anyway. The ATF is a highly problematic agency in many ways because it is regulating and managing things that shouldn't be regulated and managed. And the criminal misuse of those things is already under the jurisdiction of other enforcement agencies. So it has this very problematic existential crisis going on where it has to keep managing the ownership of devices that shouldn't be under the jurisdiction of the government, because the way that you actually manage misuse of alcohol, tobacco, and firearms would be punishing people for criminal misuse of alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, and that all falls under other people's purview. So the only thing that they get to manage is the ownership and commerce of those devices, alcohol, tobacco, firearms, and explosives, actually. But they don't like being called the BATFE. They want to be a three-letter agency and act like a three-letter agency, so we just tend to call them the ATF. So they have some redefinitions of what is a pistol and what is a rifle, and pistol braces, but only in an incredibly arbitrary way. Now, I am not a lawyer, so my recommendation to you is to go and watch a video on YouTube created by the FUDBuster, and he can actually explain better the legal definitions that exist or don't exist inside of that letter and what that letter actually means. And it's not as bad as a lot of people have made it sound, but that doesn't mean that it isn't something that should be commented on. The very fact that the 1934 National Firearms Act exists and separates short-barreled rifles from long-barreled rifles and short-barreled shotguns from long-barreled shotguns is in itself this weird anachronistic thing from, again, 1934. And the plan, as some of you know, was to ban all concealable firearms, all pistols, all handguns. And if you're going to do that, then banning short-barreled rifles kind of makes sense, so that you can ban all concealable things, period. But at the last minute, they wisely chickened out. They did not ban handguns. And so banning medium-sized guns when big guns and small guns are both legal is pointless and silly. And it's gotten even more pointless and silly as the 20th century and the 21st century have gone on. And there's a whole bunch of new categories of guns and calibers and purposes for guns. And there's things like braces, which allow you to have a rifle caliber pistol in the same way that you can have pistol caliber rifles and carbines. And the way that the ATF has dealt with this is not by simplifying the code, but by piling more and more and more complicated arbitrary code on top of itself. Not surprising, that's generally what bureaucracies do because it's good job security for them and various other reasons. So that is something that I wanted to comment on when it comes to this. And there is an opportunity for us all to comment, to actually send our suggestions and ideas to the ATF regarding this particular letter that they have sent out. So I recommend that you go and you do three things. Number one, watch the FUDBuster's analysis, read the actual letter that exists, and then go to the ATF page and comment on it. Now, when you're commenting on it, there's a couple things that you should do. I think that it is really helpful for us to make comments that are informed, comments that are clear, comments that are... I know that profanity is something that they actually frown upon in their comment section, and I frown on that as well. So I would recommend that you write clearly and concisely what you think the problems are, the issues are, why the code should be clarified rather than obfuscated, why things should be clearly defined as opposed to arbitrary and subjective. And everything that's in the letter now is pretty much arbitrary and subjective. So it brings up things like, we should consider when we talk about the difference between pistols and rifles, the weight. And it's like, okay, give me some pounds, give me some ounces, give me some numbers. Or the scope that is on it. I was like, okay, magnified, non-magnified, what magnification of optic is it that makes it into a rifle magically? Give me a number. But there's none of that in the letter. It's all subjective, it's all arbitrary, and it's basically just testing the water. So the more of us that actually write in and comment on this bill, the better. The more conversation that we have about what this letter actually does and doesn't do, and what the ramifications of some of these ideas going into effect might be. But I think it's also a tremendous opportunity. Like I said earlier, for all of the issues and problems that there have been in 2020, there are some tremendous silver linings. This brings to the fore a very interesting opportunity to talk about just how anachronistic and dumb and outdated and pointless, I would say all of, some people would maybe just say most of, the 1934 NFA actually is. The National Firearms Act that bans certain things does so in a way that is silly and pointless and didn't even make sense in 1934, let alone now. There are approximately an estimated 80 million braces in the wild on firearms in the United States today. So that is, if they are banned, 8 million illegal firearms for no reason. 8 million firearms that have not been committing crimes, even though they are apparently an extra specially dangerous class of short-barreled rifle. They have had no negative effect on criminal statistics, and they have had absolutely no issues whatsoever in any of the complaints that people have had about firearms. They haven't been used in school shootings. They haven't been used in any particularly famous shootings. They don't seem to have cropped up in any criminal reports, even though there's theoretically 8 million of them out there. And again, this is a theoretical number because it's not a firearm. It's an accessory. It can just be bought and sold, and nobody has to serialize them or keep track of them. So the number of braces that are actually out there is unknowable, which is great in many ways. It makes them harder to round up and take away. And that's part of the reason that the ATF, I believe, wants to make them a registrable item so that they are, in fact, on a registry somewhere. So someone is asking, why would we even bother to ask for our rights back? I think that it is very important that we do several things at the same time. Number one, we exercise our rights. And number two, we explain to as many people as will listen what our rights are, where our rights come from, and so forth. So this idea that we never actually talk about these things, we only wait until direct action is required, is, I think, highly problematic. And one of the really cool things about the ATF letter is it gives us the opportunity to say to people who have never really thought about the NFA, have never really thought about SBRs, but now have a pistol brace because it lets them do something cool that they don't fully understand, but gun stores started selling AR pistols in a configuration with a brace, and people bought that because it was cool and it was useful and it let them do something that they wanted to do, but they didn't really understand the law, the legality, the loopholes, the terminology behind any of it. Well, now that's all out in the open. That's now all open for discussion, and we can talk about how silly it is that you can have a 16-inch AR rifle and a 14-inch AR pistol that have vastly different legal requirements, and one of them potentially puts you in jail for 10 years over a 2-inch barrel difference, and then a whole bunch of arbitrary stuff that the ATF is considering adding into stuff somewhere. So, again, action points. Watch the FUDBuster video describing what the letter actually is, and read the letter, and then comment to the ATF, and continue exercising your rights and understanding where they come from. And that brings me to another point in my highly disorganized document of things that I was going to talk about tonight. When we talk about silver linings inside of difficult, problematic, or even evil things, I do think it's important that we look at those things very fairly. So one of the other things that happened this year that was very difficult for a lot of people, and I don't want to underplay that, is the fact that schools were basically closed. In some districts, basically closed for most of the year. In other districts, kind of closed. I think that is actually one of the silver linings in and of itself. I think that it is tremendously helpful that the number of homeschoolers in this country has basically doubled over the last 10 or 11 months. I think that is a tremendously encouraging thing when it comes to the freedom and future of the country. In the same way that even though the ATF, Gunna ATF, is a problematic thing to see in 2020. It also opens up opportunities for people to be better educated and better prepared to push back. And if we actually have 8 million braces in the wild and the ATF does something as wildly constitutional as what some people believe that letter is proposing, well, that's an 8 million person class action lawsuit against the U.S. government. That's kind of an interesting thing right there. And I know that a bunch of us have been talking about the stimulus bill. It's kind of crazy about that stimulus bill. There's not a whole lot of money that goes back to the people who were originally taxed. And a whole bunch of the money goes elsewhere. Like, for example, did you know, Chad, $1.3 billion is going to Egypt? Huh. Which, you know, Egypt is kind of an ally. We got to keep paying them so they don't join the Soviets. Like, that's why we started paying them earlier. And I guess nobody at the State Department has noticed Soviet Union is not around anymore. So keep paying them. Sudan gets $700 million, which is great. It's only aid money, not military money. I'm sure that that will work as well as last time we gave them aid money for cargo planes, which they brought from Russia and immediately converted into bombers so they could drop bombs on South Sudan. There's people in the State Department that say that that never happened, but I've seen it happen. So there's all kinds of problematic stuff going on. And it is easy to be discouraged if you're just a regular American like me. But there's a couple things that I do want us to focus on and to think about. One is the silver linings and the opportunities that we have, even in times of difficulty and in times of trouble, to talk about issues that otherwise we wouldn't have talked about because we were talking about sports, we were talking about movies, or we were talking about video games. Well, we don't have those distractions anymore because sports are canceled, nobody's making movies anymore, and Cyberpunk 2077 is too glitchy to play on any consoles. So now we can talk about the serious stuff, and the serious stuff that is happening in the country is so big and so dumb and so problematic that it is impossible not to talk about some of it. So take opportunities to have these conversations with people. Let me see here. I kind of want to keep an eye on questions and comments because since I don't have anyone else in the room with me except Chad, who's just keeping the stream running, I would like this to be more of a conversation than a monologue. So there's a bunch of people in here doing a bunch of stuff. Commenting on suing the government over SBI regulation now. There's a bunch of lawsuits that FPC is running that we should be helping them run. We should be contributing to them financially. If you have a way to be a part of a lawsuit, that's something that we should all be trying to do. So, yeah, lawsuits for sure right now. Is the P80 thing a big deal? The P80 thing is a huge deal. I think in some ways that's a much bigger deal than the SBR thing. So that is, that's a pretty crazy thing. The two things about the Polymer 80 deal that are hugely problematic, and I wasn't planning on spending so much time talking about the ATF, but they brought it on themselves. And so when we talk about the P80 thing, Polymer 80 was selling 80% lower Glock lowers, Glock frame kits, and those, they had a letter from the ATF saying that it was not a firearm. Then they started selling that not a firearm in the same box as a slide and a barrel and a parts kit. So that thing that was not a firearm, they sold in the same box as some other things that were also not firearms. And the ATF decided that when you put enough not firearm things together in the same box, it becomes a firearm, in direct contradiction of their letter and also all the documents that describe what is and what is not a firearm. So that is hugely problematic in and of itself, just to redefine reality like that in a purely subjective and foolish way. But the other thing that they started to do was they started to go after people who had bought those kits, those build shoot kits. I forget the name, the actual full name, but they managed to get, so these are not registered, there's no FFL data. But what they managed to do was get data from Authorize.net at who had been buying things from Polymer 80's website, from ShipStation, which is the the same shipping software the T-Rex Arms is using for a very short time, and also from stamps.com, which is the government portal to USPS that lets you print your own postage. So those three services that Polymer 80 was using to run their business, the government was able to get data from those three services and figure out who had been buying these kits, and apparently have gone around and tried to interview some of those folks and recollect some of those kits. Even though, again, the kit is a plastic 80% lower that is not a firearm, and then slide, barrel, springs, parts kit that are also not firearms. They're going and taking those from folks, even though what they could be doing, even in the situation, even if what they were positing was the case, they could be going to those folks and saying, hey, we've determined that what you bought is actually a firearm. Here is the paperwork so that you can properly do your background check and stuff and keep that thing that you already paid for. That's apparently not what is happening. Apparently what is happening is confiscation, which is problematic. I actually wonder if the SBR bill isn't a smokescreen, a diversion to try to take some people's attention off of the Polymer 80 stuff. So, yeah. Don't forget, they all... Yes, yes. This is just a Polymer 80 asking to line up all their dogs. Yeah. Bunch of comments here. There are a lot of people watching and a lot of people commenting. For those of you that are recently joining, it is a Merry Christmas. I want to wish you guys all a Merry Christmas, even though I am talking about the ATF right now. I also want to tell you guys that I know and have known throughout my life some ATF agents who are very nice, kind people who never gave any consideration whatsoever to what their agency actually did. And if you think that that is hard to believe, the vast majority of the bureaucrats that I have met and known here in the United States and the civil servants that I have known in other countries have very difficult time taking what it is they do in the abstract office over here and the effect that it actually has on real life human beings over here and connecting those dots. And I am not saying that just to excuse them. I'm not actually trying to excuse them. I'm just saying we need to help them understand the way that those dots are connected. So for example, a good family friend of ours worked for the ATF a long, long, long time ago. And we were one of the first families that she had ever met that actually were gun owners. And at that point, we were barely gun owners. That was when I was extremely young. And that was just kind of interesting. In the place where we lived, where you would not think that gun owners were scarce, we were some of the first gun owners that she had ever met in her personal life. And that is a very interesting thing to me. So, and in some ways, I feel like these separations have gotten even worse with social media and internet separating people physically and categorizing them into their own separate boxes. The ability for a politician or a bureaucrat to be utterly separated from their very own constituents is real. And I would say it's even easier for those bureaucrats to be separated from regular citizens, because they don't even have to lobby, they don't even have to ask for votes, they don't even have to go out and canvass or door knock or anything like that. So that is something to remember. And I'm not saying that just to absolve all bureaucrats who do foolish things because of their ignorance, but to say, hey, this is something that we need to be working on and addressing. Not everybody that is there is pure evil, but the level of ignorance that is often there, the level of thoughtlessness that is often there is something that needs to be addressed. So that's part of the reason that I think that it would be very helpful to write very calm, clear, measured letters to the ATF and not just a whole bunch of threats and violence and stuff like that. So let's get back to more 2020 stuff. Actually, I think we should probably start talking about Christmas stuff. Throughout 2020, we've seen difficulties, and we've seen a lot of people go through difficult situations that are legitimately painful. Even some of the folks that we've known people who have died related to COVID complications, and we've known people who have died because of medical and hospital situations or nursing home situations where I honestly believe that the lack of elective care, the lockdown policies actually contributed to those deaths of people who died, not of COVID, but of other things. I really think that the lockdowns in particular have affected. I don't want to mention anybody's names or any particular stories, but we've seen both sides of that. And I think most of you folks watching have probably seen both sides of that too. We're not just talking about the year being difficult because of a pandemic. The year is difficult because of many things artificially placed on top of a virus that is going around. Those are the things that have caused far more sorrow and misery. And I think we're going to see more medical complications as a result of that in the future. But again, that's something that is difficult to talk about on YouTube and this video staying up. That's something that we're going to be talking about more next year if we still have YouTube. So for a lot of folks, it's been a really difficult year. I know that in Nashville, we've seen restaurants get shut down, the mayor allowing people to buy supplies because restaurants reopened, and then immediately close down restaurants as soon as they get their shipments of perishable food that they're not allowed to actually get any return on investment for. And just kind of open and close restaurants just long enough that they keep their staff on, keep buying perishable foods that they have to throw away. It's been incredibly rough for a lot of small businesses. But there's also a silver lining in there, which is a little bit of an annoyance to me. But as we have expanded T-Rex over the year and hired more folks and bought more machines, it has actually been really, really difficult for us to find tooling. It has really been difficult for us to find CNC machines, vices. There's a whole bunch of manufacturing tools in kind of the small manufacturing space where we are that are just incredibly hard to find right now. And that is an encouraging thing for me. There's other stuff where, like for example, as we were making the chest rig, as we were making the plate carrier, there were nylon goods and parts and elastics and dyes and things that were hard to find because the supply chain was all messed up. The supply chain was all messed up from stuff that was happening in Wuhan and Chinese shutdowns and mask mandates that took some of our elastic manufacturers who were making 3- and 4-inch elastic that's great for chest rigs, and they put all of their time and energy into making the really thin elastic for going around your ears for masks. So there were a bunch of things like that where we saw some scarcity that wasn't directly related to demand for our product, but demand for other products. But on the machine side of things, on the manufacturing side of things, we're seeing demand that is directly related to people wanting to grow the manufacturing capability of small businesses in the United States. So even as restaurants have been hammered by crazy lockdown rules, we have seen a demand for manufacturing equipment across the country. The machine shop that is next door to us that we had been doing a lot of work with, a couple of months ago, they said, hey, sorry, we're booked out until February. The amount of manufacturing work directly related to building more manufacturing capability in the United States is crazy. And that is a very hopeful and encouraging thing. We actually contacted a couple of automation companies to request quotes on a couple of different things. And they got back to us and they said, hey, look, we're only quoting on like the top 10% of the bids that we're getting. We're only bidding on the top 10% of the requests for quotes that we're getting just because there are so many. We've never seen anything like this. And they were doing high-level manufacturing. So even though it has been a very rough year for a lot of sections of the economy, and I'm not trying to underplay that, one of the things that I am really encouraged about is how much more manufacturing capability we're going to have here in the United States. Because that is where a lot of people's money is going. They're not putting it into the same entertainment and disposable income areas. A lot of the income that people are getting, a lot of the money that people have been spending not on Disney and on cruises and on Disneyland and on Disney Plus and on Disney movies and on Disney things, they've been spending it on CNC machines, horizontal boring mills, tooling and clamps and stuff that's very hard to buy right now. And that's an encouraging thing to me. And we have seen a tremendous number of gun sales. We've had almost 40 million background checks in 2020, which I think, generally speaking, averages out to about 40 million guns sold. That's a record in the United States. And one of the fascinating things about that number is we have way more new gun owners than I think at any other time in history. We have more concealed carriers. And again, we're talking about the 8 million theoretical braces, pistol braces that are out there. That is something that is incredibly encouraging to me for reasons that I think should be obvious to all of us. The hard times that we are seeing are things that are, they're capabilities, they are opportunities to create new capabilities. They are opportunities to get tougher and to get more focused. And some people are doing that, and that is an encouragement. But the other reason that I am really encouraged in 2020, and the reason that I want to say Merry Christmas to everybody, and really believe that we're having a very Merry Christmas right now, is because Christ is on his throne. I don't want to lose sight of the fact that this is what we are really celebrating. There is a reason that I believe that things are moving in a positive direction in America despite some incredibly problematic things. And the reason for that is not because we bought more guns than normal and that people bought more tools than normal and that somehow we're just going to stiffen our backbones, stiffen our upper lips, and pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. We have a cultural heritage that will allow us to find the answers. And the reason for that is we have a cultural heritage that is based on the Bible. And the Bible teaches us very clearly that the coming of Christ is a major, major, major thing. And I love the fact that around Christmas time, in addition to all the wonderful superficial or tertiary benefits of Christmas, like the food and the Christmas lights and the songs and people getting together and families getting together. Hopefully that is still happening, but Christmas has been banned in certain places. There's a whole bunch of mayors who have decreed that it always be winter but never Christmas. But generally speaking, we are able to spend time with family. We're able to sing. Sometimes you're supposed to wear a mask. We're able to do a whole bunch of wonderful things, but I don't want to lose sight of the fact that those wonderful things come from the sacrifice of Christ, the resurrection of Christ, and the coming of Christ. That is something that I really, really want us to be encouraged by. It's something that everybody at T-Rex takes seriously. And as the company has grown and we've had more people in the company and more conversations about this, it's been really interesting to see the conversations that we've had about the situation in the world. And there are many different ways that people parse that. There are people who believe that stuff's just happening and stuff's just going to happen. Then there are people who have a theology of things getting worse and worse and worse until the very end, and people that have a theology of things getting better and better until the very end. Your eschatology, how you think the world ends, is a very important part of your philosophy, and it's going to drive the way that you think about today, even though your eschatology talks about the end. It's going to inform whether or not you have a hopeful or whether you have a pessimistic view of the world. If you think that you can actually achieve and build and progress, or whether you're just going to have to retreat progressively more and more painfully until the end. And I want you to know that I have a very hopeful and optimistic eschatology. I don't know that we're going to somehow turn America around and have an amazing, amazing future ahead of us. But my eschatology doesn't require that. My eschatology is not America-focused. My theology isn't even me-focused. So I don't have to win for victory to occur. I don't even have to survive for victory to occur. I just have to be focused on the mission. And the mission that I think is really important for us to focus on, and I know that we're going to get pushback in the comments. Are you watching the comments, Chad?
Oh, yeah.
I almost, let me check them for a second. Okay, nope, turn them off. All right. let me know when you see the first separation of church and state comment come through. I'm not the state, so I'm allowed to talk about churches. Oh, also, that's not what that even means. For those of you who are discouraged, I want you to be encouraged by the fact that the coming of Christ is the hinge point of history. And I want us to remember during Christmas to think about that. Even as someone who I believe that I am a devout Christian. I believe that I take my faith very seriously. I believe that it is the defining characteristic of my life and my identity. But I get so distracted, and this year has been a year full of distractions. It is so easy for me to forget these things and to forget to walk in these things. So I am trying to use Christmas and the reminders of Christmas to really refocus on the fact that Christ is King. I don't want to underplay the fact that he is a personal savior for us. I don't want to underplay the fact that he came to take away the individual sins of individual sinners so that we could be in right relationship with God. But at the same time, he is also the King of Kings. He is the ruler and the sovereign. He is more than just a personal relationship. He is actually the literal sovereign. That is an incredibly important thing for us to remember. And that's an important thing for us to take comfort in. And as Christians have preached the gospel over the last 2,000 years, sometimes different groups, different denominations have emphasized different parts of that. But everyone has really recognized that those are both facets. Those are both parts. Those are both wholly true of Jesus Christ, that he was both holy God and holy man, that he is the intercessor for the individual Christian, but he is also the judge over the entire world. These are things that the American church, I believe, is kind of losing, though. And one of the things that has been fascinating to watch in 2020 is the way that the state has, in certain jurisdictions, tried to close churches. And certain churches have been very quick to obey and to close. And other churches have been very brave to stand up and say, no, the separation of church and state is a separation of jurisdictions. We are called to meet and to worship the Lord, and we're going to do it in these certain ways. And you don't have the jurisdiction over us to prevent us from doing that. And that has been a really fascinating thing to watch. And I'm not claiming that we here in the United States have seen persecution, anything like what is currently happening in Africa, what is currently happening throughout many parts of Asia. But it has been really fascinating to see this happen. It has been really fascinating to see the responses of certain churches where, again, I'm not going to name names, but certain churches have folded when I did not expect them to. And other churches have pushed back really hard against problematic things in a way, with a boldness that I didn't really expect. And I find that incredibly, incredibly encouraging. And as we look throughout history, there are persecutions that are almost unbelievably severe that the church weathers and that incredible civilization comes out of. So I'm not trying to say that various governors in various states that may or may not be California try to shut churches down and issue them fines. I'm not equating that with the kind of martyrdom that the church has seen in the past at all. But it is interesting to see the response of the church, and it is really interesting to see the response of God's people. So this year for Christmas, as we think about the coming of Christ, I think that it is really important that we be encouraged by that. And to remember that when Christ came, he came to an area of the world that was under tremendous political persecution and difficulty and uncertainty that makes the United States particularly, but even the rest of the world in 2020, look like a cakewalk. What things were like in Judea at the time of Christ's birth was incredibly difficult and problematic. It was incredibly difficult for the people who were there. And it didn't get easier right away. And yet, when the angels first proclaimed the birth of Christ to the shepherds, they proclaim a message of great peace. They proclaim a message of coming peace for all men. This is something that we should find very encouraging. The fact that that is part of the gospel of Jesus Christ. It isn't just personal salvation. It isn't just sanctification of individual believers. It is actually a sanctification and a restoration of the entire world. And I know that people get these things very confused. It's difficult to talk about these things as a whole when they are two separate ideas. But those are part of the gospel message. Those are part of the message of the coming Christ, who is both King and Savior. I'd like to read a couple of verses from Isaiah. Isaiah is a fascinating book, and there are several parts of Isaiah that, for those in the comments that are commenting on this, there are people who say that the book of Isaiah was written prior to the coming of Christ, but then it was tweaked and changed so that the prophecies would better reflect what had actually happened in the first century. But we know that that's actually not the case, because the Dead Sea Scrolls had a nearly complete copy of the book of Isaiah. And when I say nearly complete, I mean tiny, tiny holes in the actual physical manuscript. And within that, within the Dead Sea Scrolls, that book of Isaiah is basically perfect. It's exactly the same as later versions of the book of Isaiah that we have. So we can confirm these things were written before Christ was born, and they line up with the historical evidences that we have of Christ's ministry on earth. And I want to read some of these things, because I need to hear them. And we all need to hear them. I want to read from Isaiah 53, which talks about the sacrifice that Jesus made and why that was necessary for our salvation. So Isaiah 53 is the chapter that we should read to see these things. He has borne our griefs. Surely he has borne our griefs, says verse 4, and carried our sorrows. Yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God, and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace, and with his wounds we are healed. This is a message that is throughout the Bible. Not just the New Testament, but also the Old Testament. The Old Testament makes it clear that there's a problem that needs to be solved, and that problem is solved by the sacrifice of Christ, the coming of Christ's own Son, incarnated as a human who lives life as a human and then suffers the tremendous injustice that allows him to be the sacrifice for us. But there's also the kingship of Christ. The kingship of Christ is a very important thing that is throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament. And Isaiah 9 talks about that quite a bit. For unto us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government shall be on his shoulder. His name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and of peace, there will be no end. On the throne of David and over his kingdom, to establish it and uphold it with justice and righteousness from this time forth and forevermore. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will do this. Now, if we're too selfish, if we're too self-centered, it's very easy for us to look at the difficulties within our own lives and the world around us and to say, this is not a verse that I can believe. I don't believe that there has been an increase of God's good government and peace that has no end. I don't see that at all. I don't see that happening in my own life. I don't see that happening in the world around me. I don't see that happening in history. But I believe that if we study history widely enough or deeply enough, that we actually do see some significant improvements over the last 2,000 years. We actually see tremendous, tremendous advancements in civilization. We actually see tremendous advancements in peace and prosperity. Even the 20th century, one of the most bloody and possibly the most bloody centuries. Per capita, it may not be the bloodiest century, but in terms of overall numbers, 20th century is the bloodiest century in all of human history. Even that does not convince me that we have not seen continual improvement since the coming of Christ. That we have not seen wider spread knowledge and wider spread truth and wider spread justice and wider spread peace. And we have access to this kind of peace. Even inside of the United States, we have seen tremendous backsliding in certain areas. There are freedoms that we used to have that we do not have any longer, and yet we have opportunities now that are just incredible. So on the one hand, we've been talking about the ATF overstepping its bounds, violating the Second Amendment, stuff like that. But on the other hand, think of the power of the internet and the ability to share knowledge like this and to share ideas like this and to share possibly files that have information like technical drawings for certain firearm types. Imagine the ability to share that. Imagine manufacturing capability in the hands of average, everyday people that even 100 years ago, people would have just been unable to imagine the capability of a 3D printer. $285 on Amazon right now. Go get yourself an Ender 3. It's something that an engineer 50 years ago would barely have been able to picture outside of Star Trek or something. Star Trek 50 years old yet, Chad, or is that still like 40 years ago? I get confused. The original series. Yeah, I think that's I think that's far enough away that even in the capacity, the manufacturing capabilities that we have today, how easy it is to do and to build certain things is just incredible. So I want that to be an encouragement for us, and I want that to be an encouragement for those of us who are discouraged and downcast when we see actual pain and difficulty, we see encroaching tyranny, we see rights being taken away, people's lives and souls being destroyed through crushing tyranny and persecution. Not like we have here in the United States, which is a tiny fraction of what we've seen in history, but in other countries, which is a much larger fraction of things that we've seen in certain times of history. So those are things that I want us to think about and to be encouraged by. And I want to give you a couple of action points, things that I am wanting to do. I would love for you guys to go and read a couple of things in the Bible. I'd love for you to read the Christmas story in Luke. I'd love for you to read the beginning of Matthew. I think those are really important things to be doing now. The book of Isaiah, particularly those chapters 9 and 53, for sure. But also, I'd like for you to go and read the book of Nehemiah. The book of Nehemiah is a very fascinating book about restoration and rebuilding. It is something that that we should all be really familiar with. So the basic story is Nehemiah. This is after Israel has been taken away from their land, and the city of Jerusalem has been destroyed and burned. And Nehemiah wants to come back and rebuild it. He wants to rebuild the wall, and he wants to rebuild the city, and he wants to rebuild the temple. And he faces considerable pressure. He faces pressure from multiple levels. The emperor, the larger, more powerful emperor that is technically an enemy to the nation of Israel, he actually has an in with, and he actually is able to get permission to do certain things. He gets tremendous pushback from the locals in the area who are enemies, but he is able to actually call their bluff and be prepared to fight them in actual direct battle. There's a whole bunch of ways in which he's able to help and encourage his people. And through planning and preparation and the blessing of God, they're able to accomplish an amazing, tremendous thing. And it's not easy for them to do. And it would be really easy for all of us. I see this on the internet a lot. I see this in the comments right now. People are saying, you can't vote your way out of the trouble that we're in right now. Well, sure. I don't think anyone is suggesting that casting a vote and then doing nothing is going to do anything. You can't do this to get out of trouble. You can't do that to get out of the situation. You can't do this. The fact of the matter is that it's going to require a huge amount of a whole bunch of different things. It's going to require faith and repentance. It's going to require hope. It's going to require encouragement. It's going to require diligence. It's going to require a tremendous amount of courage. But one of the things that we see in the book of Nehemiah, read chapter 4 particularly, they are rebuilding walls with a tool in one hand and a sword in the other. It's not particularly efficient to do that, but sometimes that's the sort of thing that is necessary. They could not fight their way into victory and success, and they could not build their way into victory and success. They had to do both at the same time. They had to be prepared to defend what they were building and the families that they had brought with them, but they also had to be building, and they also had to be praying, and they also had to be remembering the commandments that God had for them and repenting. They had to be doing all of these things at the same time in order to actually make forward progress. And the greatest enemy that they face is not so much an overt military threat. The greatest threats that they face are, I don't even know the right word for it, but basically slanderers, doubters, people trying to undermine what they're doing, mocking what they're doing, trying to convince them that what they're doing is in vain, that it's useless, that it will never come to pass, that it cannot possibly be accomplished. Those are the real enemies. Those are the real threats and the real dangers to the rebuilding work that Nehemiah is doing. So he is able to encourage his people, convince them of the rightness of the task and the building that needs to take place so that they actually do it. But at the same time, he equips them with weapons, he gives them a battle plan, he makes sure that they have the protection that they need, and he's not afraid of a fight. He's prepared for a fight, and he wants to make sure that his guys are ready for a fight, even while they're laying blocks, even while they're mixing mortar, even while they're doing all of the things that are necessary to build out the walls. And once they have the defensive walls up, then they start to build everything that's necessary inside the wall. So the way that he prioritizes and the way that he builds at the same time as being ready to fight, the way that he has a plan and an end goal that he can encourage people with, a vision that he can communicate, and the way that he puts everything before God, those are all things that we need to take away from here. Those are things that we need to do if we want to be builders. It is too easy to focus on the difficulties, to focus on those people who come in and say that this is impossible, that that is impossible, that this is inevitable, that there's no way that we could possibly reverse that. It is really easy for us to just listen to that stuff, buy into it, be affected by it, and let it pull the discipline and the diligence and the hope and the forward motion right out of us, and just let us sit and lament the difficulty, the position that we're in. And that is not the message of the gospel. That's not the message that God has given to his people. The message that God has given to his people is not that everything is going to be great and easy, and once you decide to follow Jesus, you're just going to start immediately living your best life now. That is not something that's in Scripture. As you read Isaiah and you see the way that the world hated Christ, the New Testament tells us that the world is going to hate Christ's followers too. I mean, someone who was literally perfect showed up, and you know what happened to him. So the closer that you are going to get to sanctification and perfection, the worse you're going to get hated by certain people. The Bible also says, if you're persecuted for being a jerk, that's on you. You're being a jerk. But if you're persecuted for following Christ, that's something that Christians can expect. That's something that Christians can count as joy and honor and push past that and continue to obey and to build and to follow the Great Commission to make disciples of all nations. So that is something that I want us to be encouraged by. So this Christmas, let's celebrate with our families. Let's get back in the Word and try to really understand these things and understand our real responsibilities. But to be really encouraged that we serve a king. We serve a king who is a sovereign, who has a plan and protects and helps his people, and who gives them missions and supports them in missions. The life of Christianity is a difficult life of struggle and of conflict. But it's toward a goal. It's toward a victorious goal. Let me read to you from Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 15. If in Christ we have hope for this life only, we are of all people most to be pitied. There's more to it than this life, but it involves this life. In fact, Christ has been raised from the dead, the first fruits of all who have fallen asleep. For as by a man came death, by a man has also come the resurrection of the dead. For as in Adam all will die, also in Christ all will be made alive. But each in his own order, Christ the firstfruits, then at his coming those who belong to Christ. Then comes the end. I should make this text bigger. When he delivers the kingdom to God the Father after destroying every rule and every authority and power, for he must reign until he has put all enemies under his feet. The last enemy to be destroyed is death. When you read Scripture that is about Jesus, and Jesus is coming, particularly in the Psalms that prefigure these things, that explain these things prior to him coming. Psalm 2, Psalm 110, they talk about Christ reigning and putting enemies under his feet. We have a triumphant future to be a part of, and we're working towards a goal of succeeding in these things, not a goal of failing in these things. And I think that is an incredibly important thing for us to remember. It's a really easy thing to forget when there are hard times. And when you look at the history of the church, there are some incredibly difficult times that it has gone through. And yet, if you look at the entire span of the church, you will see ebbing and flowing. You will see the retreating ebb of an advancing wave. You will see an overall trend line of greater and greater success, greater and greater accomplishments, greater and greater civilization. You will see the wall being built. You will see things being built, even though there are tremendous hardships and difficulties that the church has to go through and the people in the church have to go through. And the people who aren't in the church but are around the church have to go through when there are great societal difficulties or collapse, when there is the consequences of sin and death that we see in the world. So that is something that I want us to really think about. There's a video that I'm going to link to in the comments if YouTube will let me. It's a video that I made a long time ago showing the spread of the gospel, the advancement of the church, and the growth of civilization. And I find it a super encouraging video to see this visually, where the gospel has gone, where the church has been built. And if you look throughout history and you see the way that civilization has grown, and there has been an increase of peace, and there has been an increase of progress and capability, that's incredibly encouraging for us to think about, even in 2020, when things have been difficult. And compared to a lot of history, 2020 is not that bad. When you compare COVID to the Black Plague, it's not that big a deal. A lot of the things that we have been isolated from or separated from, or we have not been able to do in the year 2020 because of lockdowns, those are things that nobody was capable of doing 200 years ago, 100 years ago. We aren't able to get our streaming services to give us the shows that we want. There's stuff like that that just, it boggles the mind to think about how far we have come as cultures and civilizations in such a short amount of time. And I'm really hopeful for the future if we can not be discouraged, not lose sight of what we're actually trying to accomplish and to build. And that's something that I want to be really encouraged about this Christmas. I want to thank all of you for staying and watching this message. I know it's not as fun as talking about equipment and gear, and yet Christmas is only 2 days away. I didn't want to sit here right before Christmas Eve and just talk about radios or medical gear or load-bearing equipment. As important as that stuff is, as important as those tools are for the work of defending and of building, I really wanted to get into a more Christmas-related message. And once again, the ATF kind of forces its way into every conversation. But these are things that I personally need to think and focus more about. I think all of us do. But what I am trying to do, just so that you guys can know what some of my goals are, this morning we went out and we sang Christmas carols around the square of our town. We proclaimed these truths and we tried to encourage the people that were around us that we were encouraged. Tonight we're going to have some company over and we're going to talk about the great things that God has done in Scripture and in history. We're going to continue to do hospitality, and that's something that we're going to do as a family because we're commanded to. It's not something we're shying away from because it's hard or difficult, even though we have three small children and a whole bunch of T-Rex stuff that I usually try to do in the evenings. These things are actually more important than a lot of my distractions. Building communities, building walls, building people up, making disciples are things that all of us can work on. I know that because T-Rex is highly focused on this business and Second Amendment stuff, that we tend to be very focused on that. And I think that it's really helpful that a lot of us be focused on that. Don't lose sight of the other things that we need to build on and to build with. And we're going to celebrate Christmas. We're going to remember what it's about. We're going to try to not think about the distractions too much. We're going to open presents. And in the morning, I'm making waffles. We're going to have chocolate waffles. And we're not going to have chocolate waffles just to... Chad, you coming over in the morning?
Yeah, I was going to say, chocolate waffles, huh?
I'm opening the shop at 5 a.m. I need chocolate waffles afterwards. But we're not just having chocolate waffles in the morning as a way of trying to forget the difficulties of the year or of the week. We're having chocolate waffles to celebrate the goodness of God, the fact that it is Christmas, that we have so much to be grateful for, the fact that Christ has come, he has defeated death, he's sitting on his throne, all of his enemies are already under his feet, and now we are just doing a mopping up operation. That's basically what the rest of human history is going to be, mopping up operation. We're going to celebrate these things when we celebrate Christmas this year. We're going to celebrate these things as a family, as a community. And I want you to be encouraged that we are encouraged. And I want to apologize for you for all the times when I have been distracted or we have been discouraged by things. And our message to you, as we've talked about radios and FCC regulations or firearm-related stuff and ATF restrictions and internet security things and YouTube and Google crackdowns, we are not discouraged. Those things are annoyances and frustrations, but our mission remains the same, and our king is on his throne, and we are happy to be in the fight, and we are happy that the fight involves building as much as it involves fighting. And we're really excited about the next year. We're really excited about the capabilities that we have. Thanks to you guys, T-Rex has been able to grow as a company and to have a platform for messages like this. Thanks to you guys, we've been able to expand the stuff that we're able to build in the back of the shop. Thanks to the stuff that you guys have bought from us. So I'm tremendously grateful for everything that you have enabled T-Rex to grow into and to become. And we now have capabilities that we didn't have 2 years ago, 3 years ago. I'm tremendously grateful for that. But even outside of the stuff that T-Rex does, the opportunities that we have in the world that we're in to expand the impact that we can have in our communities and amongst our friends and inform people on things, build things that can help folks, those are all things that we need to be doing. Not just because they open doors for conversation, not just because they allow for us to tell people about messages that we have that are important, but because we are called to do that. We're called to do that by the gospel. So this Christmas, I just want to encourage you in that message. And I really want to ask all of you to be joyful, to read the Christmas story, and to read the book of Nehemiah.